Welcome to Washington Today for Friday, March 11th, 2022. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some of today's headlines. President Joe Biden announced earlier that the U.S. will dramatically downgrade its trade status with Russia as punishment for its invasion of Ukraine and also ban imports of Russian seafood, alcohol, and diamonds. We'll have more on this in a moment. Talks to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal faced the prospect of collapse. That's after a last-minute Russian demand forced world powers to pause negotiations for an undetermined time, despite having a large completed text. Last Saturday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov unexpectedly demanded sweeping guarantees that Russian trade with Iran would not be affected by sanctions imposed on Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine. That's a demand Western powers say is unacceptable, and Washington has insisted it will not agree to. Russian President Vladimir Putin approved recruiting foreign volunteers to reinforce the Russian military's invasion of neighboring Ukraine to help the people living in Donbas. Mr. Putin made the announcement during a televised Russian Security Council meeting Friday. Donbas is a region of eastern Ukraine where Moscow-backed separatists have declared independent republics and where Putin has baselessly accused Ukraine of committing genocide against Russian speakers. Russia's defense minister said the Kremlin got more than 16,000 applications. Most of those applications came from the Middle East. And the Texas Supreme Court delivered a ruling today that effectively ends the federal lawsuit brought by abortion providers against the state's restrictive abortion laws, thus ending what little path forward the clinics had to the U.S. Supreme Court. We begin in the White House Roosevelt Room, where President Biden announced more actions against Russia. President Biden announced that the U.S., along with its allies and other countries, are moving to suspend normal trade relations with Russia for its invasion of Ukraine.
We're also taking a further step of banning imports of goods from several signature sectors of the Russian economy, including seafoods, vodka, and diamonds. And we're going to continue to squeeze Putin. The G7 will seek to deny Russia the ability to borrow from leading multinational institutions, such as the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Putin is an aggressor. He is the aggressor. And Putin must pay the price. He cannot pursue a war that threatens the very foundations, which he's doing, the very foundations of international peace and stability, and then ask for financial help from the international community. The G7 is also stepping up pressure on corrupt Russian billionaires. We're adding new names to the list of oligarchs and their families that we're targeting. And we're increasing coordination among the G7 countries to target and capture their ill-begotten gains. They support Putin. They steal from the Russian people. And they seek to hide their money in our countries. They're part of that kleptocracy that exists in Moscow. And they must share in the pain of these sanctions. And while we're going after these their super yachts and their vacation homes and worth hundreds of millions of dollars, we're also going to make it harder for them to buy high-end products manufactured in our country. We're banning the export of luxury goods to Russia. They're also the latest steps we're taking, but they're not the last steps we're going to take. And as I said, at the beginning of all these steps, we're going to hit Putin harder because the United States and our closest allies and partners are acting in unison.
President Biden further explained what these sanctions mean.
Each of our nations is going to take steps to deny most favored nation status to Russia. A most favored nation status designation means two countries have agreed to trade with each other under the best possible terms. Low tariffs, few barriers of trade, and the highest possible imports allowed. In the United States, we call this Permanent Normal Trade Relations, PNTR, but it's the same thing. Revoking PNTR for Russia is going to make it harder for Russia to do business with the United States, and doing it in unison with other nations that make up half of the global economy will be another crushing blow to the Russian economy. It's already suffering very badly from our sanctions.
Speaking from the White House Roosevelt Room, President Biden announcing the revocation of the most favored nation status for Russia in response to the invasion of Ukraine. On the phone is breaking news reporter for The Washington Post, Mariana Alfaro. Please give us some context on what this revocation of the most favored nation status means for Russia.
Yes. So basically, the status just means that products from Russia imported to the U.S. are given preference. So, you know, now that Biden is asking for Congress to remove this status, Russian products will no longer receive this kind of like favored treatment in the U.S. economy, basically just kind of cut up from the economy.
And give us an idea, what impact does this move on Russian trade status mean for the U.S. and its allies?
Yeah, so the U.S. is not the only one doing this or announcing moves like this today. You know, the EU, the G7 countries said they're also going to strip Russia of multiple trade benefits. You know, the significance is that it adds more pressure on Putin for invading Ukraine. And, you know, Biden called it another crushing blow to the Russian economy. We can already see that the Russian economy is suffering quite heavily through all these sanctions that they're putting on them. So this is just one more step. You know, they keep saying we have more sanctions. We have more things coming up. We don't need to send troops because all of this is hurting Russia. And it is. You know, I think at the beginning, 2 weeks ago, people were a little skeptical about how these sanctions were going to look or the effect they were going to have. But I think we're kind of seeing it now. You know, the Russian economy is collapsing. The rubble has plunged. The stock market there has been shut for more than a week. You know, foreign corporations are escaping the country. It's pretty evident that it's hurting the Russians.
In your article, you write, Biden also plans to sign an executive order banning the export of luxury goods from the United States to Russia and prohibiting imports to the United States of Russian seafood and vodka, among other products. How would this executive order impact American businesses?
Yeah, so I would say this one's a pretty symbolic move. You know, it's still a big chunk of money. I think we're talking, I think Russian seafood and alcohol, just the two of those, were $550 million last year, you know, in the U.S. economy. But, you know, it's that kind of thing where the U.S. has other sources to pull these items from. Russia's like not the main, it's like a big player bringing these things to the U.S., but it's not the main source. There's other places where the U.S. can get all these items. And again, not to make it, you know, kind of inside looking, but it's good for American made products, you know, that he's doing this, like, you know, American seafood, American vodka, that kind of stuff is going to boom a little bit because of this. The other side of that executive order, too, is that the U.S. will no longer allow the luxury goods to be shipped from here to Russia. So that means like the Russian elite can't buy like very fancy watches, very fancy clothes, diamonds, that kind of stuff. So that's another way in which Biden is punishing the elite in Russia.
And what's the response to this move from President Biden for the average American? What have you heard?
I mean, so far, I think we just hear the oil side of it. You know, people are panicking about what the prices we're seeing at the gas pump is. I mean, I think I saw California was like $7. I think that's where we're going to be seeing most of the effect. Online, I've seen a lot of jokes about the seafood situation and the vodka situation, but, you know, it's that kind of thing where nobody really wants to send troops or wants to see the troops in Ukraine. So it's going to continue being a bad scene in the gas station. But I think other than that, you know, all these other imports that we get from Russia, not as big a deal as oil.
And in your article, you write about President Biden speaking with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky about these actions. What have you heard about that interaction so far?
Yeah, I mean, it was just another call from Biden, you know, underscoring how he and the U.S. are continuing to support Ukraine. I think he's doing this a little bit more regularly now to make sure that they know that we're on, that the U.S. is on their side. You know, like, I think the call was to inform about this actions in the coordination of the Group of Seven, but also to point out that the U.S. is sending more humanitarian and economic assistance to Ukraine. I think Biden today, during his remarks in the White House, was probably the most open he's been about the refugee situation. And he was very clear, like, we are going to be welcome and we're going to help support. We're going to continue sending aid, but we're also going to continue figuring out what we can do for the people who have already left. Because we are seeing the biggest refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. And so I think that's the thing that, for now, it's probably not going to affect the U.S. directly, I think, because refugees usually go to the neighboring countries first. But in a few weeks, I think it's going to become a thing, a priority for the president, too, is seeing what we're going to do about, you know, all of these people who are leaving Ukraine. And then a lot of them might, you know, come here.
At this point, the so-called economic war against Russian President Vladimir Putin hasn't seemed to deter him, has it?
So that's the thing that I think we're going to, it's a matter of time in the next week or two, that the sanctions are choking Russia, but it doesn't seem like Putin is willing to stop. And the thing is, like, the White House hasn't been, you know, sharing their intelligence or I mean, obviously they're not going to, but they're not giving us an idea of what could come next, a very clear idea of what could come next. All we can expect is more and more sanctions. But the president has remained steadfast. I mean, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said yesterday, like, the president has not changed his mind about sending troops over there. So, you know, we are a little nervous. I mean, I guess as a country, a little nervous about, you know, the chemical bioweapons, the nuclear weapons. But I don't think there's any show right now from the president that he's changed his mind about sending troops or having troops on the ground in Ukraine.
Washington Post breaking news reporter Mariana Alfaro. Find her article at WashingtonPost.com. Thank you for giving us a closer look at this issue.
Thank you so much.
In Romania, Vice President Kamala Harris and Romanian President Klaus Iohannis held a joint news conference in Bucharest. The vice president reassured and reaffirmed the friendship between the United States and Romania.
I've said many times, including this afternoon with the president and the president's leadership, but around the world, and I will say it here, America's commitment to Article 5 is ironclad. We take very seriously our role and the relationships that we have within the NATO alliance. We take seriously and are prepared to act on the words we speak when we say an attack against one is an attack against all. We are firm in our commitment. When I say, and we say over and over again, President Joe Biden says, we will defend every inch of NATO territory. So I am present in Romania today to reaffirm that commitment, in addition to thanking the president, your leadership, and the people of Romania. The strength of our alliance has endured and is now bigger and stronger than ever. The strength of our alliance includes our mutual commitment to stand on the principles that we hold dear and share, that include the defense of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of independent states, and in this case, Ukraine. We are clear that the work that is to be done in response to Putin's war includes standing strong within the alliance to support the needs of our partners. To that end, and to demonstrate our commitment as the United States, in recent weeks, we sent a 1,000-member Stryker squadron that creates a total force of 2,000 American troops who are prepared to stand in defense of our commitment to the NATO alliance and the Eastern Flank. We have reinforced our recent commitments, all with the mention and with the meaning of strengthening our deterrence and our collective defense.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking at a joint news conference with Romanian President Klaus Iohannis in Bucharest. Meanwhile, there are over 50,000 Ukrainian refugees in Romania. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are more of today's headlines. Warsaw's mayor is appealing for international help as the city becomes overwhelmed by refugees, with more than a tenth of all those fleeing the war in Ukraine arriving in the Polish capital. Some refugees are choosing to wait out the war or settle in the city, while others are using Warsaw as a transit point to head further west. The Polish mayor says its train stations have become crowded hubs where people are camping out on floors. This is the greatest migration crisis in the history of Europe since World War II. Texas has opened 9 alleged abuse investigations of minors who are receiving gender-affirming health care. Patrick Crimmins, a Department of Family and Protective Services spokesman, confirmed the case to CNN. Civil rights groups said in a court hearing last week they were aware of at least 3 families facing investigation. In late February, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton declared gender-affirming surgical procedures in children and prescribing drugs that affect puberty to be considered child abuse. In response to Paxton's legal opinion, Governor Greg Abbott directed DFPS to, quote, conduct a prompt and thorough investigation of any reported instances of these abusive procedures in the state of Texas. The Russian government, in a news release Friday, announced that access to Instagram would be limited in the country over posts that contain, quote, calls to commit violent acts against Russian citizens in response to the invasion of Ukraine. The Russian Prosecutor General's office wants the company Meta, which owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, to be declared an extremist organization and to be banned in the country. The news follows reports that Facebook will allow calls for violence against Russian forces fighting in Ukraine. The change will also allow users to call for the death of Russian President Vladimir Putin or his ally, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, in countries including Russia, Ukraine, and Poland. A company spokesman said it has temporarily made allowances for what, quote, would normally violate our rules on violent speech, but added that, quote, we still won't allow credible calls for violence against Russian civilians. India said on Friday it had accidentally fired a missile into Pakistan this week because of a, quote, technical malfunction during routine maintenance. That was India's explanation after Pakistan summoned India's envoy to protest. Military experts have in the past warned of the risk of accidents or miscalculations by the nuclear-armed neighbors, which have fought three wars and engaged in numerous smaller armed clashes, usually over the disputed territory of Kashmir. Speaking of nuclear weapons, at the Pentagon, Press Secretary John Kirby updated reporters on the U.S. response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and any concerns on the U.S. nuclear posture.
And then can you update on two things? One, have there been any developments or changes on the nuclear front? Like, are you seeing any indications that Russia may be considering planning for the use of a nuclear, tactical nuclear weapon? And then on the chemical biological weapons, are there any indications that they've been bringing any of those into Ukraine or into the area to potentially prepare to use?
So on the nuclear stuff, again, I want to be very careful here in talking about intelligence assessments. I would just say, and this is something we look at every day, that we are confident in the strategic deterrent posture that we have in place in order to defend the homeland, our allies, and our partners. I would not speak to anything specific on the Russian side. I would just tell you that that we've seen nothing that gives us cause or reason to change our deterrent posture at this time. I think that's really about as far as I can go. On the chem bio thing, again, I don't want to get into intelligence assessments. We're watching this as closely as we can. I don't have anything to report with respect to specific Russian chem bio capabilities inside Ukraine. I would only say two things, Court. One, this is a country that has a reputation for using those kinds of weapons on people. And we know they have a program. And two, we continue to watch for the potential. And I want to stress the word potential that they could be banging this drum with the intent of creating some sort of false flag event that they could use it as an excuse to escalate the conflict even more. Again, we're watching this every day. I don't have any specific indication now to talk about, but it is something we're concerned about. You might have heard President Zelensky in his nightly address last night say that exact thing, that you got to be careful what you see the Russians accuse others of, because it oftentimes ends up being what they're planning to do. Now, again, that's we don't have firm indications right now. It's just something that that could happen that we want to watch out for.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby at the Pentagon. Meanwhile, in New York City, the United Nations Security Council met at Russia's request to discuss claims of military biological activities by the United States in Ukraine. Here's Russian Ambassador to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia.
Currently, according to our Ministry of Defense, the Kiev regime, according to the request of their Western mentors, are trying to clean it all up to make sure that the Russian side does not find direct evidence that the United States and Ukraine are violating Article 1 of Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. Their biological programs are being urgently closed up, and the Ministry of Health of Ukraine set us as a goal to, as of the 24th of February, fully destroy the bio agents in laboratories. The analysis of instructions in laboratories tells us that the order of liquidations is aimed at their irretrievable elimination. The IO analysis shows that in Lviv alone, 233 containers with leptospirosis agents were destroyed, 30 with tularemia, 10 with brucellosis, 5 with plague. Overall, 320 containers. The nomenclature and the excessive number of biopathogens leads us to believe that these work were conducted within the framework of a military biological program.
Russian Ambassador to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, spoke in response to the allegations, also at the U.N. Security Council meeting.
And we're deeply concerned that Russia's calling for this meeting is a potential false flag effort in action. Exactly the kind we have been warning about, including from Secretary Blinken here in the Security Council last month. Russia has a track record of falsely accusing other countries of the very violations that Russia itself is perpetrating. And given that, and consistent with our previous statements, we have serious concerns that Russia may be planning to use chemical or biological agents against the Ukrainian people. The intent behind these lies seem clear, and it is deeply troubling. We believe Russia could use chemical or biological agents for assassinations as part of a staged or false flag incident or to support tactical military operations. From the beginning, our strategy to counter Russia's tactics has been to share what we know with the world transparently. And candidly, we have been right more than we'd like to. We're not going to let Russia get away with lying to the world or staining the integrity of the Security Council by using this forum as a venue for legitimizing Putin's violence. Russia has attacked homes, schools, orphanages, and hospitals. Russia has attacked civilian infrastructure, including water and sanitation facilities. Their forces are laying Ukrainian cities under siege. Hundreds of thousands of civilians now don't have access to electricity for heat or drinking water to stay alive. Russia is the aggressor here.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, speaking at the U.N. Security Council meeting earlier. Meanwhile, Republicans are speaking about how U.S. sanctions, U.S. actions against Russia are impacting Americans. Here's Representative Brian Babin of Texas speaking on Newsmax.
Well, we can message. That's what we can do. And I can tell you some of these Democrats are feeling the heat. They're looking at November. We're going to see a red wave. Americans are tired of the self-inflicted crises by Joe Biden and the radical wing of his Democratic Party. And again, let me just say this. Our country is the world's energy superpower. We have gone in 1 year's time from being energy, not only energy independent, but now we are dependent upon countries like Russia. And he's got to immediately, now that we stopped the purchasing of Russian oil and gas, we've got to have end this federal freeze on all new oil and gas projects. Well, there's LNG export permits. There's six of them out there waiting to happen. And he's got to expedite approval of our pipelines and energy development. And he's got to stop the regulatory assault on U.S. energy development and financing through our banking system. It is incredible that they are basically committing energy suicide. And let me tell you, energy independence and energy supremacy is national security for this country. And to take our and start shopping for our oil and gas with the likes of the Iranians, of Venezuelans, the Saudis, is just simply lunacy.
Congressman, the biased press and the Democrats, one and the same, they are laser focused on Ukraine's fight for its right to exist. But back here at home, the rest of the media is trying to ignore the Freedom Trucker rally that is surrounding Washington, D.C., and they too are demanding rights and medical freedoms be restored. How do you think the left wing in this country squares that circle?
You know what? I think this is something that they have. This is their strategy. I think they want to see the middle class shrink. They want to see socialism. They want to see open borders and free freedom of movement across borders illegally and do away with the illegal immigration, quite frankly, and legalize the whole nine yards. This is their grand strategy. This is how they're going to transform America. And it is an abject disaster for the American people. But I tell you, folks are waking up. I can guarantee you, Chris, the Americans are going to, the Democrats are going to pay the piper at the polls this coming November, because the American people are not going to put up with this much longer.
Representative Brian Babin of Texas speaking on Newsmax. House Democrats are in Philadelphia for their House Democratic Caucus Issues Conference meeting. In a press conference, House Majority Leader Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland and House Majority Whip Representative James Clyburn spoke of their support for Ukraine.
Yeah, the members, a lot of questions asked, a lot of presentation with respect to we need to make sure that we do everything we can, short of risking a world war, which I think there is a consensus that that risk needs to be avoided, while at the same time giving all the resources and humanitarian relief to Ukraine that it needs. And very frankly, because the President of the United States and our European allies, which the President has reunited and strengthened their resolve, have done, which is why the courage of the Ukrainian people can be manifested in having slowed down very, very substantially a much, much greater force confronting them.
If I may, Steny and I just returned, last weekend we spent down at Selma and Birmingham and Montgomery. And I was absolutely floored when person after person came to me saying, we are all for voting rights, but if you all don't do something to help end this war, there's going to be nothing to vote for. Sure. So this is how deep this goes. We're down there for the 57th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, but they were concerned about what we're going to do to stop Putin, because if we don't, they feel there'll be nothing to vote for.
House Majority Whip Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina, along with House Majority Leader Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland. At the press conference, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also answered questions on how the war in Ukraine is impacting gas prices here at home.
Putin's gas hike. That's his gas hike. This, so much of this increase in the gas tax, price started weeks leading up to what happened there. But it takes in the context of a larger increase in prices that have different reasons why we have inflation. Inflation sometimes, most frequently, accompanies lower unemployment, more inflation. We have to counter it. We have to recognize it, and we have to counter it. Supply chain shortages contribute lower supply, higher cost. We have to recognize it, and we have to address it. And one of the things that we talked about yesterday, so we don't want to give up jobs in order to, you know, we want lower unemployment. There will be some inflation that comes with that, but we don't want it can't be excessive, and all these other things contribute to it. So one of the sessions that we had spent a good deal of time on the what we call the American Competes Act of 2022, and it addresses the need for us to have a big investment in chips so that we have more supply. It addresses, and that's $52 billion, over $40 billion in addressing the supply chain shortages, over $40 billion in there, and that will go a long way to increasing supply and then reducing the rising costs that go with decreased supply. And the third part of it is investments in education and research and the rest, and that's a place that we're proud of all of it, but we're very proud of that because that comes back to what I started with earlier, survival, success, transformation, and this bill is transformational in how it not only increases supply to lower inflation, to create jobs, but to do so that has full diversity in how we go forward with education and training and workforce development and all of that.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking at a press conference during their House Democratic Caucus Issues Conference meeting in Philadelphia. A reminder that all of our coverage is online anytime at cspan.org. And if you miss any of this program, you can find it at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington delivered daily right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.